everybody, and welcome to the Daggers and Lids podcast, our first podcast in quite a few weeks, and we are delighted to be back. So much to get through. Lydia Greenway alongside me as ever. And Lids, even though we have seen each other plenty over the last sort of, 6 weeks or so, covering the 100 and the blast and all of that, we have not managed to get a pod out, or we've done a couple, but not the sort of quantity that we wanted to.
I know. We've had a few false starts, have we? We've had every intention when we've been at the 100, which feels like years ago now, by the way. We had every intention to get a podcast recorded, but for one reason or another, I think when you're on the road and you've got sometimes got back-to-back games, you just can't find the time, can you?
So it's so busy.
Yeah, the good news is we've got lots to talk about today, so plenty of stuff to get through.
And even so, we've not properly caught up with ourselves even. We've just been so cricket focused. So you, there's plenty going on in your world because you have moved house, have you not?
I have. I actually, as we speak, I have a handyman building our shed for us.
Oh, really?
So if there's a few drills that you can hear or a few nails being banged in, that is what it is. So
now, it's difficult to get away from the fact that I am a boy and I like sheds. So just tell me about your shed.
Well, the shed, I'll tell you the dimensions.
It's give me some dimensions.
8 foot wide. Ooh. It's 3 foot wide, 8 foot long.
It's a narrowish shed.
It's a really narrow shed because there are drains in our garden which it can't go over. I'll tell you what, Daggers, that is a real ball ache because I wanted to get a bigger shed. Like you, I'm sure most men want a big man cave or a big shed that they can retreat to at times.
Yes, but I also like the idea of a tactical shed like you have got, so because of drains and things like that. And is this just a garden implement shed?
It is, just to put in a few bits and bobs, probably a few coaching bags. I would imagine there's quite a few that have built up over the years. Got a big Mumbai Indians one, which is currently in the hallway, which is not a good look. No. That's going to go in the shed.
Yeah.
And what about you? You've been getting out on the golf course?
Well, yeah, with my handicap going steadily up, I'm not playing very well. Let's gloss over that. Not much going on. Played a gig the other day in Bishop Stortford. Just a local gig. This youngster is a bit of a performer, my next door neighbour, and we all got together and had a gig. And in great news, I got most of the notes right on my bass guitar. So that was encouraging. So I did that. I'm sticking with the garden theme, though. I'm currently having a slight battle with my lupins. Because I was trying to be, I'm quite green-fingered, as you know. And I'm trying to grow things. I enjoy growing things. And so when my lupins that I bought seeded, I then propagated those seeds in little containers and have tried to transfer those seeds. The propagators hold 32 seeds, and I had 3 of them. So 96 seeds. I was trying to grow 96 lupins.
Yeah.
Of which 3 have survived. So it's not, percentage-wise, it's not going well. However, I've done another batch of lupins, and hopefully these are going to be better than the first. So soon I might just be a complete lupin seller. I might just go round Bishop Stortford and try and sell my wares. But it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it. The three that have survived are looking marvellous. The new loops are starting to come up. It's very, very exciting. This is the rock and roll lifestyle that I have here in East Hertfordshire. And in other news, it's frickin' freezing all of a sudden. So I am drinking a cup of tea. I don't drink tea. But because my partner Asher has a propensity for leaving every window open in the house, it's absolutely Baltic in here. So I've decided to have a nice hot cup of tea whilst we record this podcast.
Well, I hope it's a good cup of tea. You did say to me it's not the best, but
it's not. She drinks this Earl Grey.
Oh, like, is that like, what it is?
Yeah, and it's like that those perfume teas. And I know that's all very it's Earl Grey with lemon. But no, I just like normal builder's tea, and this is just garbage. So anyway, I will continue to drink it because I feel it's more important to be warm while podcasting as opposed to icicles dripping off your nose.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have much going on in our personal lives, but we have cricket to talk about, women's cricket, and this is your one-stop shop for women's cricket. I say that, and we haven't recorded a podcast in about 4 weeks, but it is. And our intention is to be way more regular. And we shall eat lots of fibre to make sure that we are more regular on the podcast front. So let's start at the beginning. I'm really pleased to say that England are currently playing a series over in Ireland. Now, this is a slightly different England side that is going over because you would say the main core of the T20 side will be preparing for the World Cup, which is now in Dubai, as opposed to Bangladesh, because of the political ramifications, safety and security, it was deemed that it wasn't really suitable. So they've moved the entire Women's World Cup over to the United Arab Emirates. So England are playing Ireland, a slightly different look team with some of the regulars and some new faces as well. I'm very pleased to say that one of those regulars joins us now. Well, how lovely it is that we can have the star of the second one-day international alongside us, and the star of many one-day internationals, if I'm being brutally honest, the amount of times that she's won games for England. Tammy Beaumont, welcome back to the Daggers and Lids podcast. Thank you so much for joining us over in Belfast. First off, you've had a day off today. Before we talk about how great you've been over the last last couple of games, you've had a day off today. What have you got up to?
Well, I actually needed a bit of a massage this morning and a bit of a back spasm while I was batting yesterday. So must be something about being a batter over 30 and batting for too long. But no, then I headed off to Giant's Causeway with my parents. So, yeah, wow. Really nice little trip with the rents to see a natural wonder, which was pretty cool. And, yeah, a good way to get a little recovery walk in as well.
Nice, nice. And how is the body feeling, Tam?
Yeah, not too bad now, actually. Done all the recovery and, the back feels much better today. So hopefully good to go again tomorrow.
Yeah, 150 in that second one-day international. And obviously the margin of victory over Ireland was vast. Tell us a little bit, first off, about where you're playing. You're playing in Belfast at the Castle Ground in Clontarf. I mean, the facilities and all of that, they seem pretty good from what I've heard.
Yeah, it's really good here. We're staying in the centre of Belfast, but the cricket's over in Stormont. And, they're looking after us really well. We've had nets on the actual ground a couple of days, but with the schedule being quite busy, it's kind of been optional training. And the girls maybe not quite, those that haven't been playing have been the ones kind of accessing it fully. But, yeah, the pitches have been good. And so far, the weather has actually been better than over the water. So, we're loving it here in Ireland. It's a great tour and they're really looking after us.
And Tam, tell us a bit about the squad. Obviously, it's a real new look squad because of the scheduling. Obviously, the World Cup is just around the corner. So how are those younger players or less experienced players settling in? I think there's been 6 caps given out in the last 2 games. So how has that worked in terms of the team dynamics within the group and new coaches as well, I guess?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy to the start of the series. We obviously do a team picture, and myself and Kate Cross were on the front row. And if you took us out, I think there was about 15 caps between the rest of the people. And you always kind of go on the front row in terms of who's got the most caps. And I think 2 caps from Freya Kemp made it onto the front row. And and Izzy Wong, I think, was the other one. So, yeah, it was kind of crazy that that's how little experience in one-day international cricket we've got. But actually, we've spoken a lot about, yes, internationally, we're not that experienced, but actually, like, we've got a lot of experience in the professional game and playing professional games of cricket. And I think that showed in the attitude that everyone's had. Like, yes, there would have been nerves around for all those girls that were debuting, and quite a few actually that have probably been not playing as much recently. You think Emma Lam, Izzy Wong, coming back into the team. Freya Kemp actually hasn't played an ODI for quite a while, but actually the way everyone's gone about it has been and been really professional. And I think the toughest thing was probably, you know, like bonding quickly, gelling quickly, and, you know, working out who your boundary riders are or who your kind of energy givers are and who are the people that get around you. But actually it's been pretty seamless, and yeah, it's been really good so far.
And what about the dynamic between you and Kate Cross? Obviously, she's been named captain, but your experience from a captaincy point of view is vast as well. So I'm guessing that relationship has been really important this trip as well.
Yeah, Kate's done a great job so far. I think she's been really laid back with the role and appreciates it for what it is. And yeah, she's really just, you know, empowered everyone to get the best out of themselves. Like, she's not been barking orders by any means, but she's just been really relaxed about the whole thing, and I think it's brought the best out of everyone and given quite clear direction. And you know, where she's needed it, she's used you know, the resources around her, myself included, but I think she's done a great job so far. And I mean, it's helped her bowling average out no end. I think her bowling average is 3, so you know, maybe she's got to beg Heather to stay as captain a bit longer.
just on that, as you, as the senior players, and I know there are other players within the side who have been captain, have got international experience, but do you sort of see your role, you know, to assist those youngsters or those with little international experience and to make them feel part of the unit, part of the group, or what is maybe expected of them as an international cricketer? Is that sort of part of your role as well, do you feel?
Yeah, I certainly think I'm taking pride in trying to be, you know, a mentor as much as anything on this tour. I think myself and Kate have tried to make it as close to all the other England tours we've been on with what we do post-game, what we say in meetings, how we go about things, how we want to play our cricket. And even we love to try and find like the most random stat from the game. Things like Kate Cross being the third oldest person to get 6 wickets in an ODI, or certain things that you always get tagged in when you do well. She did like to say I was the oldest person to score a century in Ireland yesterday to get me back for what I'd given her. But no, I think that's kind of, yeah, something we've both taken on, is we want everyone to go away from this experiencing what playing for England is like. Even though a lot of big names are missing, it's still England caps. It's still very important that, you know, it's as seamless into other teams as possible for those individuals if they continue to be picked.
And how about your own game, Tam? I know that sounds like a silly question because you've just gone out and churned out 150 runs, but obviously you had a great season this year, captaining the Fire. You got them to the final at Lords in the 100. And I'm guessing that desire, that hunger is still there to compete at international level, because clearly you're still delivering as well.
Yeah, I feel like personally, in terms of my own batting, I've had a pretty tough season, actually. I think I've had a couple of good innings, but very little else. And yeah, I've really found it a bit of a struggle at times. Going into the 100, I felt like I was properly out of form, to be honest, but managed to find a way, which is, you'll probably say, is probably one of my biggest assets, is I've always just found a way. But yeah, I guess yesterday was kind of a testament to that, of just putting up with it and trying to find a way. And once I got in, you know how hungry I am that I don't like to give it away. So yeah, a tough season for me, but one that I think I'll take a lot of learning from, and hopefully means maybe a good winter ahead if you kind of enjoy all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there are winter plans, I'm sure, that you've got. Then the World T20 is coming up, which it looks like you're not going to be a part of. But then the following year is the 50 over World Cup over in India. And that is very much, I'm sure, on your radar and the sort of building towards that. How do you kind of do that? How will you try and build towards that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, yeah, realizing 12, 15 months away is a very big event on the calendar, and it's kind of working back from there. So, you know, we've obviously got South Africa this winter for all three formats with a test match included, and then the Ashes after Christmas. So I think the Ashes is obviously a big one away for myself. I'd love to go out there and really contribute, hopefully trying to find a trophy out there. And then, yeah, it's about kind of preparing for that 50 over World Cup and thinking about what parts of your game need to be in order to go away and play in India as an opening batter. So, yeah, probably lots of work on the fitness and lots of work on the sweep shots as well and things like that to, yeah, be good at playing spin in particular out there, I think will be key. But, yeah, I think, you know, I've got some good time off after this Ireland series. I chose to not put my name in the WBBL draft. Not that I thought I'd get picked up, but just to try and get some downtime, get some space, and then get a really good training block to set me up for the next 12 months instead of kind of, yeah, always chasing your tail. If you're one tour to the next, for me, it was more about actually what's my goal, medium to long term, and actually how can I get the best out of myself to be there.
It sounds like a very good plan. Just one last one from me. Talk us a little bit about Ireland, if you will, and the sort of opposition that they have created or come up against. In the first game, it was a little bit closer. They put up a bit more resistance than in the second game. And I don't think, in fairness, the second game possibly sort of showed what they're about. But they've got a couple of stars within that side. What kind of opposition have they proven to be, in your view?
Yeah, I expected them to play how they did in the first game. I don't think yesterday was a fair reflection on them at all. I think I've been really impressed with how they've gone about it. Their attitude has been outstanding. Their fielding's been good. Their attitude in the field's been really noticeable. And even yesterday, obviously, we chose to bat first, but they held us for a very long time and actually picked up kind of regular wickets in the first half of the game, and we're only going at kind of 4.5. On quite a good wicket. So they did well. They've got, you know, quite simple plans, bowling straight and bowling with good consistency. And it was really probably that partnership with Freya Kemp that started to take the game away from them. And I think we scored nearly 100 in the last 10. So that's really what took the game away from them. Probably a reward for our patience. And I think when you've got 320 on the board, it's always tough to chase. And you kind of, if you lose your two big guns in the first over, which they did, it's tough. But I've been really, I'm not surprised at all at kind of how good some of their players are. I've played with Orla Prendergast at the Blaze for a couple of games, and she's an outstanding cricketer and one to certainly watch because I know how young she is and how much better she's getting. But her knock in the first game was outstanding. And I don't know if you've seen the ball she got me out with in the first game, but that ball's getting me out most days of the week. So the girl can bowl as well.
And she's been picked up in the WBBL as well, hasn't she? I saw that.
Yeah, and I think that would be great for Irish cricket. I think they've got a lot of really young girls. You can tell how young they are, but I just think that means they've got such a ceiling. And if they can get the support and kind of, you know, backing into them, then they could actually really challenge some of the top 10 teams in the world. And yeah, I think it's a team that, you know, we should maybe try and play a bit more of, because I think they're up and coming, definitely.
Sure, there, I agree with that as well, Tam. I know they're desperate to play against more big international sides. But Daggers, I would love to ask more questions, but I know it's Tam's day off, so I think that's a good chat. And yeah, Tam, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tammy.
Especially on your day off. I know how precious and few and far between they are.
Cheers, guys.
Tammy Beaumont with us. Always great to hear from Tam, and in pretty good nick as well she is with that big 150 that she scored in the second one-day international. Lids, this is a obviously the tour is set up. It's given us an opportunity to see one or two new faces and blood them, you know, from the England A side into the full England tide. What's your takeaways so far?
Yeah, I mean, this is meant with the most respect to Ireland, but I think, as you would expect, in terms of the scoreline, obviously they're currently 2-0 up in the ODI series. I think it's as most people would have expected. I think the only thing you would say is that in that the second ODI that's just happened, the conviction in that win was the thing that surprised me. I thought Ireland, with some of the players that they have now,
yeah,
and they do have some very good players. Obviously, we've seen some of their Ireland under 19 players who are now in that senior team. Obviously, Orla Prendergast, I think, is an outstanding player. You just felt that maybe they would have offered up a little bit more resistance, which is what they did in that first ODI. They posted, I know they're all out, but 210. So a score-ish. We don't know exactly what the wicket was like. But yeah, for England, they've been hugely dominant. I've got a slight unease, and this might be against the grain or a bit of an unpopular opinion, and I'd be really interested to get your thoughts on it, is just about the number of caps, England full international caps, that have been given out on this tour. Now I understand that they had to send a fully fledged England international side because it's the ICC Women's Championship, so it counts towards that. And obviously with the scheduling as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because this is not to take anything away from the players who have been given caps, but I do wonder, out of the list, how many of those players are going to go on and feature regularly within the England side. It's a tough one, isn't it? I don't know where you sit with that.
It is tough for the reasons that you've mentioned. The scheduling aspect of this, and I can understand England wanting to protect their T20 players, given a very busy 100 and a very busy summer as well, and actually giving them rest and allowing them to prepare for the T20 World Cup. So when you take that amount of players, and what we're talking, 15, 16 players, it shows a couple of things. It does show the depth that England do have. I agree with you in principle that I always think that England caps should never be given out just to sort of try someone out, or that they should be earned. You would know better than me. I've not got any England caps, but it's just one of those things where it is a sacred thing. Representing your country. I also, it's a strange dichotomy, because who else are you then going to be picking? And I think when you look at some of the players that have been used, you know, Paige Schofield, has she earned the right for an England cap? Yeah, I think she has. You know, given her performances this year and the way that she's played for the Oval Invincibles, especially in this 100, a couple of real, real impressive knocks, and over the last couple of years in domestic competition as well. Yeah. Maddie Villiers has played international cricket before. Izzy Wong has, I know they want to keep her around, has she earned the right to be playing for England at this moment in time? I've got to say no. And that's nothing against Izzy. It's look at her performances. Where is she as a cricketer at the moment? And she's nowhere near where she was 18 months or so ago. So there are lots of debates to be had. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I think two things can be true. I think that you don't want to give out England caps sort of willy-nilly, but also given the situation and what you want to achieve out of it with scheduling and also being a competitive side, I think it's quite difficult. And that sounds like I've got splinters in my backside. From sitting there, because that's your job, really. But I do find it difficult. So what I think is the core of that side are actually fully fledged internationals.
Yeah.
So if you were dishing out six or seven at a time, I'd be a little bit more concerned. But maybe two, three, or four, I think that is reasonable.
Yeah, no, I just thought it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on it. And I know it was something that couldn't be avoided either, because of the reasons that you've stated. And interestingly, moving on actually a little bit, I think it's a really important series for Bess Heath.
Yes.
When you think about her role, her role for England is currently backup wicketkeeper to Amy Jones. But at any point, Amy Jones can go down with an injury. She's obviously over in the Big Bash at the moment playing or will be playing for Perth Scorchers. And I think Bess Heath needs to get herself to a point where she is ready to go and perform to the standards that England need. What should she get in the first game? 33 not out, and she didn't get going. She didn't get going in the second game at all. So I hope that someone like Bess is going to really grab these next few games and say, right, I'm going to dominate here with the gloves and also when I get a chance with the bat as well, which hopefully is a fair reflection of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you do look at the England bowling attack, Cross, Filer, Kemp, George Davis in the last one. Now, okay, as you want, wasn't needed to bowl because they ran through them for 45. But that's a serious bowling lineup. And some on this podcast would say, what is Filer doing there in the first place? Why isn't she with the T20? But anyway, that's some of them. I don't know who that could be. I don't know where you sit with that, but I'm not going to press you on it. We're gonna crack on. But great to hear from Tammy, as ever, and we thank her for her time and good luck to the side in the third one-day international. I don't know where to put my tea. I've not got.
Drunk it, or is it still going?
It's still going. It's still going. I'm going to put it on the floor. So if you see me dip down like this, I'm just going to be picking up and putting down my tea. Right, we have got an absolute truckload of stuff to get covered off. And so we're going to do it as thoroughly as we can, but in as short a time as we possibly can as well. We have not talked about the 100. It's now a long time ago. We're not going to go over every little thing, but just a couple of headlines from it. It passed the 1 million landmark of fans attending the women's competition this year. The competition once again broke the global record for total attendance at a women's cricket competition, 320,000 fans. Records broken for the women's attendances at 7 out of the 8 venues. Just looking at the venues, I can't see which one wasn't broken. Oh, it was... No, I'm looking at them. Old Trafford, Headingley, Sophia Gardens, Utility Bowl, Trent Bridge, Keir Oval, Lords. Which one am I missing? Southampton. Oh, no. No, that's the Utility Bowl,
isn't it?
Which one am I missing?
Trent Bridge, the Blaze?
Edgbaston. Edgbaston, I am missing there. Although the attendance is there, are always good. But from an attendance point of view, absolutely sensational news. And also, of the tickets sold, 31% of the people coming through the gates are women. Yeah. And 30% new to cricket. And so it sounds like I should be on the marketing team for the 100. And look, I'm not saying everything is absolutely perfect. I think the men's competition this year was pretty dismal, if I'm honest. The ball dominated bat, I don't think that necessarily was the entertainment. But from a women's perspective, Lids, I think as good a tournament as we've seen so far. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's really fair, especially considering the players that were pulled over to it. Obviously, the best Indian players, the best Australian players, which we haven't had collectively in the prior hundreds up to this year. And also, I think just on your point on the hundreds men's competition not being as good, I think it's really important when people talk about the hundreds, and this is more to do with people outside of the women's comp, is to not say the 100 has been awful this year or the 100 is a really bad introduction to the game.
Two comps.
Yeah, because I think in a way they're really paying no attention to what is happening with the fastest growing part of cricket at the moment, and that is women's cricket across the board. And actually that's where organisations can really capitalise on. So that's why I think it's been a brilliant year again. As you say, the cricket has been very, very good. The crowds have been excellent. I think they vary quite a bit as depending on where you're at. I think down at the Utility Bowl, I think they're always such
doing
good crowds.
So well.
The Oval as well. I wonder how much of that is to do with the connection with the regional teams.
I think it's a big part of it. And we'll talk about alignment. We're going to be talking about alignment in a second. But But I totally agree, and they really have bought in to that Southern Brave side. Yeah. Due to maybe it's just Southern Vipers, Southern Brave, I don't know. But they always support women's cricket brilliantly down there at the Utility Bowl. It always seems a lot fuller down there than it does for women's cricket. You look at Old Trafford. I think Old Trafford could do with a little bit of a boost, if I'm honest. Yeah. Headingley as well.
Yeah.
When we went up for the first game, actually at Old Trafford, it was a bit sparse, have to say. Yeah. Now that doesn't help. It was a Monday or whatever it was, and it might not have been the nicest weather or stuff. But I still think there's much more to do. The one thing that was really good, I think, and we're looking. This shouldn't be measured as a dynamic or whatever, but there were so many sort of little viral moments in the women's game. And, you think of the catches that were taken, or, Maddie Villiers up at Trent Bridge with the one-hander, or Charlie Dean's one-hander at Lords, or Shabnam Ishmael having the wood over Meg Lanning and Marizan Capps bowling. And the most viral moment, I fancy, was Cordelia Griffith's reaction to when Deepti Sharma hit the winning six in the final between the Spirit and the Welsh Fire, and her sort of mouth opening just in slow motion, this slow I can't do that for our audio listeners, but you can understand it. And it's moments like that actually generates more interest, isn't it? So that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That moment actually reminded me, and this could be a bit niche, but anyone my age, sorry, Tackers, don't mean to mean this in a rude way, but do you remember the film Free Willy, where the whale eventually manages to escape, and for a moment you're thinking, is he going to make it over this wall or not? And that could have easily been what Cordelia Griffiths was watching, but she obviously wasn't. She was watching Deepti Sharma.
So what you're telling me is Deepti Sharma's six is the equivalent of Willy the Whale jumping over some rocks.
That is
the movie equivalent.
Everyone else is probably thinking it, let's be honest.
Sensational. We should have more. We should start a trend, actually. Name us, get in touch with us, at Charles Dagnall, at Lydia Greenway. Moments in the women's game which correlates with a moment in a movie. Right, I would love to see that. So get in touch with us. You can do it via email, daggersandlids@outlook.com, or follow us on social media and let us know. I love that thread from you, Lydia Greenway. Right, let's bash on with the news. Very quickly, in the CPL, the Caribbean Premier League, the Barbados Royals overcame the Trinbago Knight Riders to secure their back-to-back title in the CPL by 4 wickets. Basically, this competition should be renamed If You've Got Hayley Matthews, You're Going to Win. And three-team tournament, Lids, great that there is one, but 4 games apiece, it's only 3 teams. We would like to see it expand, but we also know how limited the West Indies Cricket Board are with finances. But, it's another comp, and it looked great on TV from what I saw.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would hope that it will only grow, obviously, and eventually become aligned with the men's competition. But again, it's another opportunity for players to play some really good quality cricket. So you look at some of the players who are out there, Amanda Jade Wellington, Jess Jonathan, Shikha Pandey, Laura Harris was out there, Lauren Winfield Hill, Erin Burns, who obviously had a brief stint at the London Spirit. So I think what comps like the CPL does is it gives the fringe players from the international sides or the big international sides opportunities to go and play more cricket and then obviously get better. And then for the West Indies, gives their players opportunity to get better as well. So, I'm with you. I think hopefully it will grow. But it definitely needs more teams and more matches.
A week and a half or 2 weeks in Trinidad, not the worst gig in the world. If you can earn a few bucks whilst you do it, that's good on all of those players as well. Yeah. So that's the CPL covered off. Let's continue with the franchise theme, the WBBL draft. happened. When did it happen, actually? A couple of weeks back?
It was towards the end of... where are we now? What month are we in?
We're in September, Liz.
We're in September. It was towards the end of August.
It was, yes.
I was going to say towards the end of September, but we're not even there yet. So there we go.
I'm going to bash out. It's good to know where you are and that you're so across things that you're not sure what month it is. Let me go through the England players that have been selected. Sophie Eccleston at the Sixers, Heather Knight at Thunder. Danny Wyatt has been picked up by the Hobart Hurricanes. Amy Jones, Scorchers. They were all retained, by the way, apart from Danny Wyatt. Alice Capsey at the Renegades. Holly Armitage has got a gig at the Sydney Sixers. Yeah. Georgia Adams at the Thunder. Georgia Adams has previously played for the Strikers and a player that you mentioned a little earlier. From Ireland, Orla Prendergast has been picked up by the Strikers as well. So good for her. As for the rest of the overseas team players coming in for teams, a lot of the similar faces that we have seen in the 100. DeAndre Dottin is one that comes in for the Melbourne Renegades. Jemima Rodrigues is there for the Heat. As expected, Chloe Tryon, Amelia Kerr, Hayley Matthews, Marizan Kapp, Shabnam, Ishmael Shikapande. An interesting one for the Scorchers, Hemalatha Dialan, has been picked up by then. Chamari Atapatu is there. Yastika Bhatia for the Stars. Smriti Mandana, Liz Elia's got a gig at Hobart, and Nadine de Clark at the Brisbane Heat. Your takeaways, please, Lydia Greenway.
Brilliant. I think, again, great to see more Indian players being given the opportunity to go and play in the Big Bash. And again, for the England players as well, it will only help their development. I think the only thing for the England players is that they might have to leave. I think they will have to leave early to go to the South Africa tour, because I think the ECB this time, compared to the WPL at the start of the year, they didn't actually say to players, you have to play on this tour. I think it was New Zealand, wasn't it, where they were going to. And perhaps because of the money involved in the WPL, they felt that they didn't have the power or the right to say to someone like Nat Sivabrant, you have to come and play against New Zealand. But that's changed now. So they've actually said to England players, you have to be available for selection for the South Africa series.
I'm assuming that's something you're in agreement with.
Yeah, I am. I mean, for me, I think international cricket from a player's point of view has to come first. Mm. But I also think, and I know a few people have been speaking about this, I think Julian Goswami has spoken about it and Charlotte Edwards has backed it up. I think for the three big competitions, franchise competitions, so the WBBL, the WPL and the 100, I think that has to be ring-fenced in terms of when it comes to fitting in international series. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree. I think I've spoken about this a lot. And the manipulation of the women's calendar is something that you can do. The men can't do it at the moment. Like during the 100, there was the Lanka Premier League, I think, the Canadian Premier League, Major League Cricket. You know, there's four tournaments, franchise tournaments going on at the same time. Yeah. And so, plus you've got to try and add in the IPL and then you know, the BBL and then international cricket all around that. It's just so, so difficult from the men's perspective. Yeah. And they've got themselves in a real tangle. Yeah. The women's can lead the way here and say, right, August is for the 100, November is for the WBBL, and March or February, March is for the WPL. Yeah. And then our international games can be put around there and dotted around. There's 9 extra months there. And if then the CPL gets a little bit bigger or the Pakistan Super League comes in or whatever it might be, the Super Smash gets a little bit more funding, then yes, you can take a look at these things. But I agree that the manipulation of the women's calendar is something that you can do and you can work it to your advantage in the women's game far easier, far more easily than the men's. So I'm along with that. So looking forward to the WBBL and we shall try and get some reaction from maybe Mel Jones or Julia Price or someone over in Australia in previewing that as and when it happens. Right, cracking on. We'll quickly do the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint And the reason is they've got other things to talk about the tier one clubs and alignment of the 2025 season, which I want to spend a little bit more time on. But the Rachel Hayhoe Flint semi-finals are coming up on the 14th of September. The Sunrisers have found themselves in a semi-final. Congratulations to all at the Sunrisers, because it's been a bit of a brittle couple of years if you're a Sunrisers player or fan. So huge congratulations to them. They will take on top of the table Northern Diamonds. In the other semi-finals, it's the Vipers versus the South East Stars. And the final will be taking place on the 21st. Great news for the Sunrisers. After a couple of barren years, it's nice to see them get their due.
Yeah, it is. And I think you always like to see teams who have really struggled sort of shake that tag off them, because sometimes that can stay with you for a good few years. And, you know, they've played some really good cricket this season. I haven't always been able to keep up to date with everything that's been going on. But I think they've been able to build, a decent squad. And I think people at different stages have performed. Obviously, someone like Grace Scrivens has been a big part of what they've been trying to achieve. She obviously made the decision to go to the Sunrisers. She could have gone to the South East Stars or one of the other, maybe even the Vipers. But she thought the Sunrisers was the right side for her. So good that they're in the semi-final. And actually, if you look at the teams in the semi-final, there's the South East Stars and the Vipers. I know the Northern Diamonds top the league. But for me, sometimes when I look, whether it's a reputational thing, I think of South East Stars and I think, oh my gosh, they're stacked. And I think of the same with the Vipers. But I suppose with the Northern Diamonds, they've just found a way to play some really good cricket. But the Sunrisers there in that first semi-final, you just never know what can happen, do you? They're within touching distance.
It's great to see them there. Northern Diamonds, I think it was 2 years ago, they won the final at Lords. That they won it. So they've got a good base and a good core of the side. But really looking forward to seeing how all that plays out. Congrats to Eve Jones, who tops the run scoring list, 556, including two big 100 for Eve. Saren Smale over 500 runs and Fran Wilson. Interestingly, Eve Jones, Saren Smale, Fran Wilson, Sophie Lupp are the top four run scorers in the Rachel Hayhoe Flint. None of their sides have made it to the semi-finals. Phoebe Turner topped the wicket charts with 23, Hannah Jones 22, 21 each for Sophie Munro, Rhianna McDonald-Gay and Georgia Adams. So congratulations to those guys. We shall look forward to seeing how the semis and final play out, and we shall try and be across that as well. Well, we will be across it. We won't try and be across it. We will be across Right, final topic. And an announcement was made, again, a couple of weeks ago. We are still in September, Lids. The month hasn't changed since we've been doing this podcast. And it was announced that the Metrobank 50 Over competition and the Vitality Blast will be aligning with the new women's tier status that there is in 2025. So the county teams, of which there are eight in the women, there will be aligning with the 50 over Metrobank with the men and the Vitality Blast with the men as well. We will get some double headers for the Blast and how well they've worked in the 100. That we would imagine is a very good thing. There's going to be a women's finals day, which is similar to the men's finals day. As we record, that's coming up at the weekend. Two semi-finals and a final for the 50-over competition. So that's what the headlines were. The announcement was made. Quick thought on that. Is that a massive surprise?
No, I think it's the right thing to do, absolutely. And actually, it's a pleasant surprise, I have to admit. I think, particularly with the Vitality Blast with T20 cricket, we were talking about it the other day. I think the women's game, when it came to T20 World Cups, was initially started as double headers alongside the men. And the aim of that was to grow the game, encourage more people to come along and watch and convert them to watching the women's game, as was the 100. They've done exactly the same thing. So I think to have those double headers for the Vitality Blast and the obviously the branding with the Metro Bank as well. Can't do double headers, unfortunately, with the 50 over cricket. But I think the fact that they're all under the umbrella now is brilliant. Obviously, interesting with the names. I know it's only a small thing, but the Blaze are the only team, I think, to keep their own identity. I think everyone else, I was chatting to Beth Barrett Wild, and I think they were given the opportunity to pick their own name. So it was just the Blaze who had gone down that route. I don't know what you think, but maybe Nottinghamshire Blaze might be a little bit more aligned.
I don't get it at all. I just don't get it at all. No one really knows who the Blaze is. If you're a cricket fan, if you're not across the women's game, so the whole point of alignment is the fact that you can latch on to a side. Now, if you're a Nottinghamshire member and you're sort of like, I don't get it. And I said this on commentary the other day. Every other single team are going with their counties, with their counties' names, apart from one, the Blaze. And it sounds like they're homeless. Now, we know that if I'm Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club and I've got one of the tier one stages and I'm paying for everything, I want that Nottinghamshire name all over everything. Now, if it's the Nottinghamshire Blaze, I have no problems with that. But if you're going to align. I don't understand it. I think Alex Hartley said something similar, and I totally agreed with her on social media that I don't understand why, if seven of the eight teams are going with their county names, why isn't the eighth? And I don't think it's not as though there is, 1,500 members of the Blaze, like paying members or whatever. And I think if you're going to go with alignment, go with it, go all in. Don't just do it half-cocked. So I'm not. I'm getting more upset about this than actually I should be. I don't know why.
It's a good job you got a cup of tea to calm
it
down.
It is actually. As bad as it is, it is a good news. But I genuinely don't see why. It was left to the players. Players should have nothing to do with it. You play for who you play for. The fact that in 10 years' time, those players aren't going to be there. And you're still going to be... I don't understand that whatsoever. Anyway... Be that as it may, I hope, and you were talking about this, about the names, I hope they keep the names of the cup. Now, you can call it the Metro Bank, absolutely. Yeah. Call it the Metro Bank 50 over competition, but I hope they're playing for the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Cup or trophy. And I hope they're playing for the Charlotte Edwards Cup for the Vitality Blast. I have no problems with that, but if the name of the actual piece of silverware or goldware, I hope they keep the names on there. It's a bit like the Rugby World Cup, which plays for the William Webb Ellis Trophy kind of thing. But it's still known as the Rugby World Cup or whatever it is. So that's just one of my things.
Yeah.
Afterwards, we're just going to look here, or right now we're just going to quickly look at some of the signings that have been made and keep across that before we leave you. A little bit of a shout out to the Warwickshire website and the Surrey website and also the Durham website, because they are making their signings loud and proud. There is a lovely section for the women's teams that are for 2025, and they're easy to find, easy to access, etc., etc. Would other, please, here's my rant, Lydia Greenway, would other counties who have a Tier 1's women's team get your website sorted and celebrate it a little bit more? And get the news out there, because at the moment, some of them, I'm not going to mention any names, but some of them are pretty ordinary. And it's very difficult to find any news on the women's front. So more signings have been made. Surrey have made 13 signings. They have announced 13 signings. They include Bryony Smith, the captain, Kira Chatley, Danny Gregory, Alexis Stonehouse, Paige Schofield, ADR and TCC, Tilly Courteen Coleman and Alice Davidson Richards, Phoebe Franklin, Ailish Cranston, Rihanna McDonald-Gay, Emma Jones, Kalia Moore and Alice Monaghan has signed for them as well. 13. Nottinghamshire, the Blaze. But Nottinghamshire have signed. I'm going to call them that. That's it. George Elwis has signed up, as has Charlie Phillips. Just two announcements for them. Lancashire have made one announcement. That is Eve Jones has signed for 2025, signed a three-year contract. Durham made some good signings, as we expected, mainly from the Northern Diamonds. Holly Armitage, Bess Heath, Lizzie Scott and Katie Levick. Warwickshire The Bears, you Bears! Hannah Baker, Katie George, Karis Pavley or Pavley, was still debating on how that surname is said. It's a bit like Dan Mosley or Dan Mousley. We will get, well, it is Mousley. Or is it? No, it's Mosley. It's Mosley, isn't it? It's Mosley.
Yeah.
Anyway, Karis, get in touch. Please put us out of our misery. M. Arlott and Chloe Brewer are the ones that have signed for Warwickshire. As for Somerset, Essex and Hampshire, no announcements as yet. So I'm even struggling to find... Oh, by the way, Ali Maiden has been made head coach of Warwickshire, very involved in the women's game for a long period of time. Chris Guest is the Blaze head coach. And Danny Hazel, the Durham head coach. Other than that, I can't find any more. I've done my due diligence, Lydia. I've done it, but I can't find any more.
You've done well to find that many daggers. I have to admit. Well done. And also, I mean, the signing of Ali Maiden, that's obviously quite recent news, isn't it, with Warwickshire? No surprise, Danny Hazel being at Durham and Chris Guest at the Blaze as well. But yeah, good to see some progress being made. Do you know who I think has done well, Daggers? Is Surrey signing TCC, Tilly Courtine Coleman, because I reckon Hampshire would have probably been after her. I know her roots are in Surrey. Well, she's a Kent girl, but obviously with South East Stars and obviously it now being Surrey, she's there. So she's only going to go from strength to strength. And then it will be a pickle, won't it, for Yorkshire when they come onto the scene as to how they can get some of their players back. That will be the biggest challenge. They've lost quite a lot, haven't they, to Durham?
Yeah, and my guess is that Durham are not stupid. They're going to sign these players onto longish-term contracts. And so, like I say, that's the one little sticking point I have with the whole thing for Yorkshire coming in and Glamorgan the year after is who they're going to sign, because a lot of these players are going to be signing 2-3 year deals and stuff. So we'd like some announcements. We're asking nicely. We'd like more announcements from Somerset, from Essex, from Hampshire, and do it well. I mean, that's why I like what Surrey have done. They've announced 13 of them. They've got them sorted and they're struck while the iron's hot when people are talking about cricket. And that gets you excited for the next season. But anyway, that is where we're up to on the signings for next year. Lids, I think we're pretty much done.
Do you know what? I think we've done really well there, Daggers.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's been a lot to cover. We've probably missed something. Actually, one thing we have missed, this was the WBBL, but I just saw this morning, actually, Piper Cleary has been ruled out of the WBBL, an ACL injury for Perth Scorchers. But from my notes, Daggers, I reckon we've got everything.
I think we are there. I think we are there. And moment of the podcast, and I really want to blow this up into a thing, is that movies that equate to moments in the women's game, for the whole Free Willy Cordelia Griffith moment in the 100, that's what I'm looking for. At Charles Dagnall, at Lydia Greenway, you can catch us. You can download us, whatever your podcast platform is, you're able to download us. You can follow us on social media, and you can also watch us on our YouTube channel. Just go to @daggersandlids, and we will be piling out. We say this, I'm hopeful that we will be piling out many more podcasts, especially in the build-up to the Women's World T20. But for now, I think we're done.